Mr. Stewart, Rail 4. Now, what about the leading seaman? I know you don't know his name, but what was he like? The communication,
yeah.
Mr. Renshaw.
He was... he was ginger. He obviously right here, you know, he was the smallest chap. He again was regular, Harren. I would say he was a wee bit... he was okay as regards us, but he was very confident, we'll put it that way, you know. You might say stroppy, stroppy now, but he was all right with us. But he was a chap with plenty of confidence. And
was he fair?
Yes, oh, was he?
Fair?
Fair, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the men themselves, you know, the other ordinary seamen or ordinary telegraphists?
How did
you get on with the lads?
Well, there were three of us, yes. We all got on fine. One was Ginger Simpson. The other one was Tully, Les Tully. And poor Les, he was seasick, always seasick. We just left the harbour, and Les was sick. He suffered. We used to feel sorry for him, you know. In fact, often, if he was on the next watch, we'd often try and do a wee bit of his watch for him, you know, stay on a wee hour, especially during the night if it was... he was to get over at 4 a.m, take over at 4 a.m, or let him lie till maybe, I'm not saying we're that generous, but let him lie till maybe 4:30 or 5, because the poor bloke was in agony when he was waking, so we try and let him sleep on, you know. And eventually, I think, they took him ashore, because he just was unfortunate that he couldn't get over it, so they let them put him ashore.
Now, what about, how'd you get on with the rest of the lower deck?
They said, all right. We seemed to get on fine, you know, lots of laughs. And
there's no bullying or anything, it was a happy ship, was it?
I would say it was a very happy ship, The one good thing about the Navy and discipline, of course, you see, if anybody comes aboard and had a wee drink and one thing and another, and not so much for fighting, but they want to have a sing-song during the night, then, well, discipline takes over, and it's all quiet and that, because you're an excess, you know. I don't think they had many people defaulters or that on the ship very often, you know. They would have defaulters and that, but I think it was quite a happy ship all the way through.
And why do you think it was happy? Was it the officers or the petty officers, or who made it happy?
Well, obviously, I think the officers and the petty officers would be at the root of it, you know. And then the chaps themselves, of course, a lot of us were all new to the Navy, so we're all struggling along together, or we're all learning new things together. You know, the whole thing was new to us, so we hadn't time to think of other things, maybe, you know. No, it was okay.
So how long were you doing these Atlantic runs for? How long were you doing the Atlantic convoys for?
Maybe about 6 months,
So from late June through to December, so almost until when you were sunk?
We did actually come back from that until... we did one or two other trips to other places. Earlier on, somewhere in the career. We went to Italy one time. We took a convoy to Italy.
To Naples.
I think that was about September or so. I went to Naples.
What do you remember of it?
Ben.
What do you remember of it?
The trip was all right, and then we got through they told us about where the Battle of Trafalgar was. We passed the area where Trafalgar, I think they call it Trafalgar, don't they? Trafalgar. And then we passed Gib. We got to Naples. Vesuvius had erupted a short time before that, apparently Mount Vesuvius had erupted, and it was still, if I remember right, smoking. It was still smoking a bit, and the captain told us when we passed Isla Capri, which was near the Bay of Naples, and we got in, and we lay there for probably about a week. My memento from there was a glass phial, you get in your chemistry set, full of different coloured sands, and the Italian that sold me it told me that this was all the different colours of sand that had come out of Vesuvius, and that colour was the first day and this colour was the next day, so he must have spent a happy afternoon on the beach getting different colours of sand. However, that was part of it, so that was my memento. Apart from that, we went to, but sure, Naples was smashed up a lot, and an awful lot of places were out of bounds there as well, you know, so anyway, we got along fine, and that was it.
Any other special trips that weren't not, I mean, other than Atlantic trips, any other special trips?
We did one up north one time, you know, sort of, what do they call it, a group, anti-submarine, you know, just all escorts. I think they just made them...
An anti-submarine sweep?
Sweep, that's right. We did that up in the north of Scotland one time.
What do you remember of that?
Not very much, really. I just mind there was quite a few ships up there. I remember one of the, I think it was a frigate, the same as ours, was to go alongside an aircraft carrier, well, one of his smaller, to refuel. But he was rolling so much that the mast was, you know, the aircraft carrier was so high that the mast was in danger of hitting the carrier, so they had to abandon that. And the other thing was we got one of the aircraft that must have been off the carrier got us sighted a submarine. Well, he said he sighted a submarine so many miles away. So the carrier told us, you dash on and we'll catch up. We'll come up as soon as we can. So we dashed off at our best speed, and every time we looked behind, the carrier was coming along as fast as we were. Because they weren't so very fast, these, you know, end speed. So we got there, but we never found anything up.
And what would you do when you got back to Liverpool? What would you do going ashore in Liverpool? What would you do? Where would you go? What would you do?
Well, actually, I'd made friends, a chap who was in the same billet as myself in Aberdeen. His family lived in Liverpool, and one time when I was ashore here, he was in Liverpool. I can't think what he was on. Oh, he was on the Belfast. Belfast, that was a cruiser. But he must have been home on leave, and somehow he found out that I was in harbour. So actually, I'd taken him home to my house in Edinburgh here from Aberdeen a few times. So he returned the courtesy, and when I got to Liverpool, he took me along to meet his people. So often I used to go along there to Liverpool and see his people, or the usual going to the cinema or the theatre or.
What about pubs or dance halls? Are you interested?
I wasn't very interested in dancing, no. I was never a dancer. She'll tell you.
No, pubs, then. Did you drink much? Or you were fairly abstemious. You didn't drink much then?
Not very much, no. I never drink, you know, but I mean, I wasn't a drinker, really, no. Not really.
What about leave? Tell me about, you know, when you got proper leave and you could go back to Edinburgh. Yeah. What was a typical leave like for you?
Well, probably got, what, maybe 10 days or something like that. In fact, that's one of the leaves when I was when the ship was refitting in harbour. One of the leaves, going back again.
All right.
I got, well, say 10 days leave. But with the ship taking so long, after I'd been home about maybe 8 days of that, the telegram came into the house in Edinburgh here, leave extended to such and such a date, so I got about another 3 or 4 days leave. And before that finished, I got extended again because they didn't want you on the boat, so extended again. So I ended up probably about 3 weeks leave that
now
time.
Now,
what
would you do on leave? You know, I mean,
well,
because you weren't working. I mean, how did you spend your time?
I used to just maybe, well, so none of my chums were all a bit younger than I was, actually, you know, so they weren't in the forces, most of them, maybe a couple of years younger than so. Maybe meet them in the evening, pictures, or some, maybe dancing sometimes. Not much drinking, none of the time very much in these days. During the day, I would maybe just go around and see some of the old friends, neighbours, and things like that.
Did you get treated as sort of a bit of a returning hero? I mean, I know everyone was at war, but I mean, did they make a special effort to make you leave happy? People?
I don't think so. I don't think so. They always used to say, when are you going back? You know, when. When are you going back? But no, like say the chums and that, oh no, it would always be quite a thing to us and that. But I mean, I don't think we had any special parties or anything like that for it.
When you got back, were you nervous, as I said, you know, when you went out on a mission into the Atlantic, did you get nervous?
No, funny enough, it never bothered me. It never bothered me at all. The strange thing was, on the last leave I had, I never ever bothered before. When I think, I used to walk down these docks, Gladstone Dock, in that pitch dark at night, and you got back on board and I never fell in the water, you know. But the very last leave I had, that must have been maybe before we did that last trip over to America, and I got an awful feeling to get a torch, to buy a torch. Because I got this feeling that if I got trapped in the lower deck, you know, and the lights went out, although, again, they're emergency. Anyway, I just got this feeling that I should have a torch in case there were no lights and to get out, you know. The only time I ever, and I got the torch, but I never thought any more about it, I thought, you know. But even for walking up the docks and that, you never had torches, and I don't know how we didn't end up in the water, you know, going along some pitch dark night, so get your way back to the ship.
So, but normally you weren't nervous. But you weren't attacked, so, I mean, you know, you weren't attacked at that time, until you were attacked. You hadn't got that much to worry about.
No, I never used to think about it. You know, when you're young, you mustn't bother. You know, even the seas, when the waves were big, I used to quite enjoy that. You know, it was a bit of a laugh, you're having your sea knocking the ship around all over the place, you know. It's like going to Blackpool, the Pleasure Beach, but you get that for nothing.
So the next thing would be in 1945, January 1945, the trip where you were sunk. Now, can you tell that whole story of what happened?
Yeah, well, we left Falmouth, yeah. I can't remember, I think it was...
What were you doing at Falmouth?
Well, we'd taken part of the previous convoy down, you know, when they got to Britain... The convoy split up, so I think, as far as I remember, they told us two or three ships were going down to South Coast, and we got detailed off to escort them down to Falmouth. And I can't remember it, but according to that book there, while we're in Falmouth, another ship dragged its anchor and damaged the banners.
But you don't remember that?
I don't remember that.
Stick to what you remember, yeah?
So anyway, we left Falmouth in the evening, and when we're coming in the morning, we got a signal to look for a ship that had disappeared off the radar screen somewhere. So we did look for the ship, but we never found it. I think we found some wreckage, but we never got any ship or anything like that. So signaled, you know, home, or signaled ashore that we didn't find any, so there's a carry on. So we carried on. Personally, when the canteen used to open at 10:30 till I think it was 10:45 in the morning to get your cigarettes or whatever it was, and I used to be one of these lazy characters that didn't like going down and standing in a queue. So I used to wait maybe till 10:40 and go down towards the end of the queue, so it wasn't so long to stand. However, that day, I remember a funny thing, I was sitting in my bunk, and I looked at my watch, I must have been off watch, I looked at my watch and it was 10:20 or 10:25, and I said, oh, I'll get away down and get in front of the queue today. Why I did that, I don't know, but I said, I'll go down and get in the front of the queue, instead of waiting to the end, because I'm doing nothing anyway. So I went away down, two or three blocks in front of me, waiting in the canteen open. Then the canteen opened, 10:30, and I used to buy stuff for, you maybe got to the office and asked about his own watch one time, cigarettes, right, I'll bring him back. Anyway, I did that. And I went down to canteen queue and got my stuff, and I came out the canteen, which was right at the stern of the ship, and I walked along the deck and up the ladder to the first deck above where I said, And I met this chap, I'll have to come back to that now. He was a telegraphist. He took over from Les Tully. I had his name a minute ago. Yes, Barnsley. I think it was Ron Barnsley. I'm just not sure his first name. Barnsley, he was a telegraphist. Anyway, I met him up on this deck just outside the wireless office. And we're standing talking. I'd just come from the canteen, and we're standing talking, and there was a hospital ship passing. I think I found out later it was Atlantis, hospital ship Atlantis. Anyway, the first hospital ship I'd ever seen. And I'd stand talking to this man. Oh, and the hospital ship, and then we looked, and the next thing was, boom, I don't remember a bang. I saw the stern rising in the air from this position we were in. The stern rose in the air, and you could see, which you couldn't normally see, the depth charge rails. And the depth charge rails rose up. What's happened here, you know? And imagination was that the depth charges had exploded, you know? They went up in the air, and that was that.
You've been torpedoed?
Got torpedoed. The torpedo hit the screws. So, when I turned around, Barnsley was lying on the deck, and that was him. He was killed. So, I was fortunate. I was standing beside me like this.
What had actually killed him? A piece of shrapnel?
Shrapnel hit him. Shrapnel hit him, and his legs and that were broken. It must have been the blast, you know? Got him. So, Barnsley was lying there, that was that. So, as I say, I didn't know, first put it off, and I got the imagination it was this death charge, you know, but it was that. Then the next thing, the wireless aerials had got blown down, so the PO said to me, get the aerials up again, you know, so I went around putting up the aerials again. And, of course, they were getting messages off, you know, the PO was up. I don't know if he'd been in the office, or he probably would be at that time, the man had been up in the office anyway, you know. So they were getting messages of it, you know, to tell them what had happened.
People on duty were doing that. The telegraphist on duty were doing
do that. That's right. Or the PO, he would maybe take over, you know, take it over. They had a Q code. Q code, I don't know if you know about them, but the Q code. Different Qs, and so on, had different meanings. But for emergency, it was in case you didn't have time to do anything else. And this particular Q, which I can't remember, I will say, it might have been QTC, or just say a word, a Q something. And when they sent that, that meant you have been mined, have struck a mine or been torpedoed. And then you had to get from the bridge, they were sent down the position, you know. So you just sent this, that got it out quickly, you know, Q, we'll call it QTC. QTC your distance, you know, is your position. And that at least let them know you're in trouble, you know, you've either struck or mine, you didn't know what. So I went in, and that little office, as you said, at the back, I was away along there, but somebody...
Back to the reserve one?
That's right, the emergency one. But I didn't actually use it, but it was just a lot of the aerials came down, so I was putting aerials up again. And then the next thing they asked me to... The PO says, all right, you have a safe full of all the secret books and things like that. And you get all the books in the safe, and it was screwed to the wall, right, you know. And we were going to abandon the ship, we thought we were going to go down, get ready to throw that over the side. So really that was about what I did, you know. And
did you actually throw them over, or just get ready to throw them over?
Get ready to go, that's right. They would have gone to abandon. I can't get ready to abandon, you know. And then it was lying at an angle for a while, and then it righted itself, you know.
What was the state of the boat? How much damage had been done aft?
Well, it blew a good bit of the stern off, you know.
Right off.
Right, completely. Well, they fired another one at us, you see. About 10 minutes later, it must have been a good shot when I think it now. His first one apparently was an acoustic torpedo, which the noise attracted it. But the second one, it couldn't have been acoustic because I just thought of that just now. I think couldn't have been acoustic because there were no engines running and no propellers. So he must have had a good eye because he blew exactly just further in
on the stern again.
From the stern, another bit in from the stern, and blew that off. And I'm practically sheared off. I could show you pictures of it, you know. And unfortunately, that's where we caught most of the chaps that got, an awful lot got killed there. More than in the first explosion, apparently there weren't too many. But the ones that got killed, the first one or injured, were in the canteen. So I was lucky I didn't do my usual routine and wait to the last minute to go down to the canteen. I went first.
That was the point of, yes, I see how that.
So I got out and along, but apparently it wasn't too bad, the first one, but a lot of them, you see, they were sent down or went down to help the guys at Wehrhardt. And of course, the stern was crowded when the second one hit it. That got most.
Now, was the Manners on her own? When the, I mean, this yeah. hospital ship had just gone by, but the ship was on its own.
It's on its own, yeah.
So what happened next then? Do you know the name of the submarine, the number of the submarine? That
yeah, I've got it there. We
can look it up.
It was either, there was a mix-up, there was two of them actually, 1051 and 1172. I can tell you which one, because there was a mix-up for years and years. They said it was, I think they said it was 1172. But that Gibson found in his book.
I think it's 1051, yes.
Yeah, that's right. He says, oh, well, according to what they saw, that ship that rammed it saw that the U-boat had a fish or something painted on the side. And they said, oh, that wasn't his son, so that was the other one, you know.
What happened next then? You, this second torpedo struck, lots more casualties. What happened to you and the ship then?
To me on the ship?
And the ship, yeah.
And the ship, yeah. Well, of course, some of them were trying to make sure it was watertight, yes, but again, amazing, say, for the American workmanship, it was marvellous. Apparently, there wasn't any water come in at all, you know, it was sheared off, and that was it. And then, of course, the boats were hurt. So they said, well, send a signal away, some, what do you call them, motor torpedo boats or motor gun boats, they came out first. From Holyhead, and they came alongside, and the hospital ship, which I don't blame him, as far as I remember, he cleared out, you know, he might have heard the bang, so he kept going, and we fired a shot, and I wouldn't say it was across his bows, but they fired a shot near the, as far as I remember, near the hospital ship, and he signaled, what's wrong? Tell us, you know, what's wrong? So they told him, you know, they must have told him what was wrong. So he did stop, and he stopped her, and I'll say that for the Germans, and they were touching him, because he stopped maybe a mile, 2 or 3 miles away from his hospital ship, stopped there. And then by that time, these torpedo boats or motor launchers came out, and they put some of the casualties on them, and they ferried them over to the hospital ship. They didn't get an awful lot of people. Most of them just went with the ship, you know, but nobody had 8 or 10, and they took them over to the hospital ship, and that was that. And then the next thing after that, the corridor, and they arrived.
What did you feel? You could see them arriving.
Yeah, I must have been in the deck. I must have been sorting these aerials here, because I was on the deck, and I could see the these ships coming dashing along, and I thought, oh, that's great. And then after that, it was just a case of, our chaps, the ASDEC chaps, funny enough, one of them, we've been very friendly with him for years, Joe. I never knew until that reunion, he lives in Edinburgh, the other side of Edinburgh, in Balerno. I don't even know Balerno, the other side of Edinburgh, Joe Jones. And he was the ASDEC man, Joe Jones, but he unfortunately, he died as well. And he was one of the ASDEC men. And as I say, we didn't know he lived in all these years in Edinburgh. We lived all these years in Edinburgh until that reunion for 10 years ago. And we got together again, you know, not nothing nice bloke. But, they heard, they knew where the submarine was with the ASDEC. You know, the submarine went to the bottom. And they could hear the submarine. I mean, they got a ping on it, but they got a ping on the submarine. And they knew where he was lying. But of course we couldn't do anything because we couldn't move, we just had to lie there. So when the corridor and the other ones came out, it was just a case of sending a signal to them, oh, so-and-so, since it's a spot, you know, and over there. And that's when they got them, you know.
But what could you see of the action? What could you see of it?
Nothing at all, no.
Well, they were out of sight with it.
By that time I must have been going on watch again. No, I never actually saw anything of that action at all, no. Probably heard some of the bangs of the death charge or something, you know, but no, quite honestly, I saw nothing.
So that was the end. What happened next? I mean, how did the ship get back to port?
Well, we lay there for a while, and eventually, I'm not sure, somebody started tours. I used to think it would be one of the motor launches or that, but it couldn't have been, that would be too small to tour, I think.
So where were you towed back to? Who towed you? Where did they tow you back to?
One of the other, well, there was a tug, I think, that eventually took us over. A tug took us over. And we ended up in people say Liverpool, but no, Barrow-in-Furness. Took us into Barrow-in-Furness.
And what state was the ship in? The back had been blown off, but the watertight compartments were holding. Would that be right?
That's right. Held great. You know, I mean, the stern was blown off, but you'd have thought that, it was a bit ragged for the cut off for a knife, but, you know, it just went right at the watertight doors and compartment, and apparently no water came in at all, you know, marvellous.
And what happened when you got to Barrow-in-Furness?
I think they tied it up with one or two people still on board that had died, you know. So eventually, in fact, I often think when I think of now, it was they sent railway goods wagons down, you know, to the ship, and they put them in the coffins right on into railway goods wagons. They're a bit callous, really, when you think of it now, but that's what I did. I'm sure that's what I did. They had, you know, your old wagons they had on trains, and there wasn't many. Went home, you know. I think we contacted their people and asked them if they wanted to take them home or what. So one or two said I'd send them home, but the rest, which again wasn't very many, two or three, had burial service in Barrow-in-Furness, in the cemetery in Barrow-in-Furness. Ceremony there, you know, with fire and a salute and so on.
Was it an emotional affair?
Yes, it must have been.
Were you there?
Yes. And some of the people, rather than taking them home, the people came to Barrow-in-Furness, some of the families came to Barrow-in-Furness. that was it.
You didn't stay with the manors, did you? Because that was the end of the manors.
Well, that's right. We'll run it for another couple of weeks, you know, maybe a week or two until they got it, us organised where we're to go. I think I went home, direct home on leave to Edinburgh, yeah. And then had a week or two and then went back to Portsmouth.
And that would be February-ish?
Must have been February, that's right, maybe into March, February.